Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, October 9th, 2020, Section A. Protesters arrested outside of home. By Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E, at MRT.com. Protests have continued this week outside the home of Pastor Bob Fu, founder of Midland nonprofit China Aid, and led to arrests. Three protesters were arrested Wednesday by Midland police officers and charged with jaywalking, according to the arrest report provided by the Midland County Detention Center. When asked what led to the arrests, a spokesperson for the Midland Police Department said they were jaywalking and had been previously warned. The penalty for a jaywalking misdemeanor is typically a fine, similar to receiving a traffic ticket. Protesters first arrived at Fu's home on September 26th and left before returning Monday on a charter bus. They continued to demonstrate outside Fu's home through Thursday with signs and pamphlets accusing Fu of being a spy for the Chinese Communist Party. Fu told the Reporter Telegram on Tuesday he believes the protesters are acting on the direction of Mao Zedong, an exiled Chinese businessman who claims to be a whistleblower for corruption within the Chinese government. Videos uploaded on Guo's social media accounts show him saying he will send hundreds of protesters to Fu's home. However, Guo's status as a whistleblower has come under scrutiny amid a federal fraud investigation, and some media outlets have speculated he is himself an operative for the CCP. Video of two of the arrests and blog entries about the protests were posted on GNews, a website run by Guo that frequently publishes conspiracy theories about the CCP and the COVID-19. Police officers gathered amongst the crowd and waited, it seems like hawks, to arrest someone, states one blog entry on GNews about the protests. That indeed happened to three people. When one person questioned the arrests, the police answered that it was because he had stepped on a lawn. The video of the arrests show one man and one woman being asked to sit on the sidewalk before being placed in an MPD patrol vehicle. Protesters in the background can be heard yelling that the officers are going to be fired and that a lawyer is on the way. Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton said during a press conference Monday afternoon that the FBI and CIA are investigating death threats against Fu and his family. Fu said Tuesday they are safe and are being protected by law enforcement at an undisclosed location. Help is available for Midlanders facing eviction. By Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. Midlanders who have received eviction notices, or those in need of rent or utility assistance because of financial difficulties related to the pandemic, have several options available to them, although their landlords may not be providing information on these resources. I wrote an article 2 weeks ago about residents paying significantly more in rent because they signed leases before the coronavirus pandemic and economic downturn. A woman I interviewed for that article told me she was stuck paying $600 a month when her apartment is now than what her apartment is now listed for. She also said she was laid off because of the pandemic and feared being evicted. Residents continue to receive notices to vacate despite a federal order halting evictions. I'll be covering this further, but in the meantime, I wanted Midlanders who have received such notices to know what their options are. The first course of action for those facing eviction should be to fill out the federal eviction moratorium declaration form and give it to their landlords. The CDC ordered a temporary halt on evictions through the end of the year because of concerns evictions could lead to further spread of coronavirus if a person who is evicted is then forced to live in a shelter, for example. But that moratorium is only effective if tenants submit a form swearing they're unable to pay rent and will likely become homeless if evicted. Landlords are required to make tenants aware of this moratorium and give them this form at the same time as eviction notices, the Texas Supreme Court ruled last month. If they don't, tenants may not know the moratorium exists. A lot of people fall through the cracks facing because of this, said a representative for 211 Texas, a program of the Texas Health and Human Services Commission. This form and more information about the moratorium are posted on Midland County's website under the Justice of Peace tab. The Texas Supreme Court also ruled it must be given to tenants to fill out, if they choose to, by the court during their eviction proceedings. If tenants were not made aware of the moratorium or have received unofficial eviction notices that were not filed in court, 211 Texas recommends applying for legal assistance from Legal Aid of Northwest Texas. They have offices throughout the state, including Midland and Odessa. Sometimes the moratorium doesn't do, though, is stop rent payments or prevent landlords from charging late fees. Landlords can still require all rent payments and fees when the moratorium ends on December 31st. Those who need help paying their rent or other bills can contact several different organizations and nonprofits. Helping Hands of Midland provides rent and utility assistance and has already given $1.2 million in rent assistance this year. Residents can apply by calling their hotline at 520-8900. Midland Fair Havens provides assistance for single mothers who are being evicted. More information on the requirements to apply can be found at mfh.org/financial assistance requirements. West Texas Opportunities provides some rent and utility assistance. To apply online, go to gowto.org. Area Agency on Aging of the Permian Basin provides funding for seniors in need of rent assistance. For more information, call 563-1061. Several churches provide financial assistance, including First Presbyterian, First Baptist, and the St. Vincent de Paul Society at St. Anne's Catholic Church. A representative for 211 Texas said these organizations and services do, unfortunately, sometimes run out of funding when the demand is high. Those applying for aid may have better luck at the beginning of the month when many services receive additional funding. 211 Texas can provide more information about available services either by calling 211 or using the search feature on their website at 211texas.org. Sales Tax Collection Rebounds in October by Stuart Doreen. S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. The City of Midland's sales tax collection in October was bad, but it could have been much worse. The city reported a drop of 1.4% compared to October 2019. That decline was a drop in the bucket compared to previous months and just $67,742 less than the record collection for October. A collection easily the second largest for an October in the city's history represents spending from 2 months earlier. This month's collection is based on spending in August. Still, the $4.812 million was a welcome sight for city officials. While October marked the 10th straight month that the city reported a sales tax decline year over year, it is the smallest drop of the bunch. The next smallest drop was 9.41% in January. From June to September, those drops were greater than 20%, ending with 36% drop in September. The October collection is the first of the city's fiscal year, so the city is starting off the year stronger than it ended the fiscal year in 2020. Last year's total collection was 14% lower than fiscal year 2019 and missed the city's sales tax projection by more than $3 million. This year's projection is $49.7 million. Gas price in Midland drops below the $2 mark by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. After a jump of 9 cents a gallon last week, the average price of gas in Midland started to come back down. AAA Texas reported this week that Midland drivers are paying 3 cents less than last week. The drop was tied for the second largest in the state. The organization also reported that Midlanders are again paying less than $2 for gas. The average price in Midland fell to $1.98 a gallon, still the third highest average of any larger metropolitan area in the state, according to AAA Texas. El Paso was first with an average of $2.11. Odessa was second with an average of $2.06, which was 1 cent lower than last week. The state average was unchanged at $1.86 a gallon. 2 weeks ago, Midland was within 5 cents of the state average. The average price in Midland is 52 cents lower than it was a year ago. The average price across the state is 44 cents lower. AAA Texas reported in its weekly news release that the price for a barrel of crude oil has been volatile in recent days, but still less expensive than the beginning of 2020. Also, winter blend gasoline, which is typically less expensive for refiners to produce, may also be contributing to current price stabilization. Texas drivers have been paying below $2 a gallon for regular unleaded on an average of 209 days. Even with the Hurricane Delta churning in the Gulf of Mexico, the statewide gas price average is sitting at the same price as last week, Texas spokesperson Daniel Armbruster said in an email. Market analysts will continue to monitor the storm's impact. However, this is another example of how much an impact the demand destruction caused by COVID-19 concerns has had on the oil and gas industry. Across the region, other averages reported included $1.81 in Lubbock, $1.84 in Amarillo, $1.90 in San Angelo, and $1.94 in Abilene. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refiners and Midland's distance from pipelines. The lowest average of the state and nation was $1.73 in the Red River community of Sherman, Denison. State and local news. Westland Contemporary Western Art Exhibit features Midland imagery. The Museum of the Southwest is showcasing Westland by Texas artist John Flaming starting Monday. West Texas is the focus of the exhibit, with various pieces of art being influenced by Midland. This whole room is a series I did called Oil on Canvas, and it's all about the oil and gas industry. This show debuted at David Dyke Fine Art in Dallas in 2014, and I wanted to bring this series to Midland because a number of these pieces are specific to Midland. A piece called Midland After Midnight depicts what Midland looked like in 2014 before an oil downturn, he said. A lot of the pieces deal specifically with Midland, from oil rigs to Dairy Queens and motel signage. Flaming's friend, oilman David Arrington, helped him research for the series by letting Flaming spend a day on one of his rigs near Pyote. Flaming has been a design and branding studio for 25 years that informs his work with big, bold graphics, he said. A lot of these are collective memory images. How many have we seen in West Texas? This is my interpretation of a modern, contemporary interpretation of an abandoned West Texas farm. He painted a lot of cowboys because the image is a bigger-than-life type of figure. His favorite piece in Westland is Cowboy in Big Bend, because of the way the cowboy is looking back at the viewer, which is engaging. What I'm really doing with this series is reimagining the Western art genre, he said. I wanted to make these canvases big and bold, just like Texas is and the cowboy culture is. The exhibit is also extensive with 110 pieces. He said he has worked on most of the pieces in the show over the last 18 months, but some pieces were done in 2014. The exhibit showcases his sculpture and photography work, which were taken with his iPhone. He has done a photography project using an old Westinghouse TV, which he acquired from a friend's 1960s ranch house in the Preston Hollow area of Dallas. When I first saw it, it had the tube and all the electronics in it, he said. I love the metal cabinet and the fake printed wood texture. I had no clue what I was going to do with it, and I took it home where it sat in my garage for another 2 years. One day I thought, what would happen if I took all the tubing and guts out of it and shot a picture through it? He made the TV see through by removing the tubing and wiring, then took it to the alley behind his house. He then started taking pictures with his iPhone because it is a side project and he has to move in and out of the location quickly. A lot of these shots are either in the middle of a road or an area where I need to make a quick workout of it. So that's why the iPhone works. I started to take this TV all over Texas, and I've been to all 7 regions of Texas with it. He brought the Westinghouse TV to display beside the 24 images he created with it. Once he reaches 200 pictures in the series, he will curate the total down to 100 to make a book, he said. He also has a series of sketches done on 1880s book paper. If viewers look closely, they can find Midland-specific pieces. Wahoo McDaniel went to high school in Midland and became a big pro wrestling star, he said. I thought he was such an interesting character and was a Native American, so I thought I had to do something on him. The museum is still doing private showings for the Westland exhibit. Tickets for households can be purchased at sforce.co/3ijapwj. Tall City Brewing announces Oktoberfest. Live music events calendar includes events at Rusty Bucket and Wagner Noel. By J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hurstnp.com. Tall City Brewing Company announced Oktoberfest will start today at the brewery. There are also options for Midlanders to catch live music outside and at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center beginning this weekend. Oktoberfest at Tall City Brewing Company will feature German-style grub served by food trucks including Gillis, Basin Dixon BBQ, Geronimo's Street Side Diner, and Down South Seafood. The weekend will have contests such as mini ring toss and yodeling. Customers can also take advantage of 15% off Earth is Canceled Marzen beer. Those wearing Oktoberfest garb will also receive a 10% discount. Midlanders also can catch live music Friday at the Rusty Bucket BBQ or at the Destination Midland. John Ward is playing at the Rusty Bucket BBQ. Tickets are $12 in advance and the event starts at 7 p.m. The Locomotives are playing at the Destination Midland. Tickets are $10 and the show starts at 7. Larry Gatlin will play at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center on Monday. The show starts at 7:30 p.m. and tickets are $40. Daily coronavirus cases in Midland topped 50 on Thursday, from staff reports. The number of coronavirus cases appears headed over 200 for the second straight week. The Midland Health Department reported 52 cases Thursday, the most announced this week. With more than 40 cases every day, the total this week is up to 189. That is 17 behind the total through 4 days last week, according to the health department. The city said these cases are reflective of lab results from Wednesday. Earlier in the week, Midland Health officials said the number of people receiving tests from Midland Health recently has been higher, as has the percentage of those testing positive inside Midland County. There have been 4,132 cases during the pandemic. There were 1,356 active cases, according to the health department. Also, there have been 85 COVID-19-related deaths in Midland County. $200,000 bond set for man charged with death of infant, from staff reports. A Midland man charged with capital murder in connection with the death of an infant is being held on a $200,000 bond. Cleveland C. Johnston II, 33, was arrested Wednesday in connection with the death of a three-month-old. Midland police were dispatched at about 12:30 a.m. Wednesday to Midland Memorial Hospital to investigate the death after being notified by Precinct 1 Justice of the Peace, Terry Luck. An officer and MMH staff observed that the three-month-old had bruising on his forehead, left ear, the back of his head, and what appeared to be a blood blister behind his right ear. He also had bruises in his mid and lower back and blood spotting in his diaper. Johnson brought the child to MMH late Tuesday night with respiratory and cardiac issues. MMH staff revived the infant twice before pronouncing him dead at 9:38. The infant's x-rays were later examined and showed he had multiple broken ribs and a broken left collarbone. Johnson told hospital staff that he arrived home with the infant, who had been crying in the back seat. He then took the child from the back seat and tried to burp him. While burping him, the infant stopped breathing. Johnson and a woman attempted to administer CPR to the infant on the way to the hospital. An investigation into the death revealed that Johnson was with the infant while the woman was at work. The woman noticed the infant was unresponsive when he picked her up from work. Texas Size Garage Sale expands to 6 days. The Texas Size Garage Sale has everything a person could need and more. Because of social distancing guidelines, only 100 people will be allowed into the warehouse at a time, said Tracy Renton, Development Director for Senior Life. The annual sale is a fundraiser for Meals on Wheels and will be hosted over 6 days this year at 407 East Scarborough Drive. The Texas Size Garage Sale will start today. There will be two sessions each day, 9 a.m. to 11 and noon to 2. The sale continues Saturday, next Tuesday, October 15th, October 20th, and October 22nd. Renton said that there will be no 50% off day, but the nonprofit might do that in December or January. The opinion page. Our view. Pence's performance puts pressure on the president. By Stuart Doreen. S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. Wednesday night should have been game, set, match for Republicans. Vice President Mike Pence absolutely took Kamala Harris to school in a performance reminiscent of Lloyd Benson's beatdown of Dan Quayle. The only thing missing was a "You're no Jack Kennedy" line. Didn't matter. America didn't need to go to the judges' scorecards. The only thing sadder than the disparity in the political talent difference on display in Salt Lake City was that it likely won't matter, because this election is not a referendum on Pence. It's not a referendum on Biden or Harris either. The election has been and will be about America's ability to handle 4 more years of Donald Trump. Why did Joe Biden spend so much time hiding out in a basement? Because he could. Why does America not care about Harris's lack of attributes? Because they don't have to. This election isn't about either of them. It's about the man whose bad fortune was that he was going to have to fight against an adversarial press and a disease that has proven to be 1,000 times worse. But the president kept feeding the beast, poking the bear, and putting himself out there to be attacked, one bad tweet after another, and one Bob Woodward interview after another. Trump has a press secretary and vice president who were more than capable of speaking to America on his behalf when his presidency turned into a campaign for 4 more years. The president should have allowed people like Kayleigh McEnany, Pence, or even a congressman like Dan Crenshaw to reach out and seal the deal with these voters needing a little convincing. Instead, one has COVID, another can be 1 month from worrying about his prospects in 2024, and the last is in a fight for his congressional seat. It didn't have to be this way, but the president hasn't been able to help himself. Trump has made the fatal mistake for a political candidate with a flawed approval rating. He made the campaign about him. That is inexcusable. If the press won't point out the differences in you and your opponent, Mr. President, it is your responsibility to do that with the precision of a world-class surgeon. If the moderator isn't asking the right questions, it's up to you to take the debate to your opponent. Pence showed that ability Wednesday. You, on the other hand, showed an immaturity and desperation with 73 million people watching. That is a lot of potential voters, some hoping for that one reason to think to themselves, of course he's better than Biden. It is hard to expect the audience for round two will be as big. If it is, for the sake of your race, Senate races, and Republican versus Democrat battles up and down the ballot across America, you better show you can come up as a clutch, as your vice president candidate did. It says something about the status of America that the bar Democrats have to clear is so low. After all, Joe Biden had to show he was coherent. And Harris, well, I'm not sure what the bar was for her, that she's not Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. But, Mr. President, you have to show the binary choice and prove why you are the better candidate. It may be obvious to those who remember the bustling economy, Supreme Court successes, or Middle East policy accomplishments, but all that seems like a lifetime ago. As for COVID-19, you must demonstrate what, frankly, has been missing from the White House message since the inception, compassion. Because in the effort to ridicule mask wearing, social distancing, and other measures that many believe will prevent the spread of coronavirus, you have come across as uncaring. A pandemic isn't something that a current office holder can win. Just ask Governor Greg Abbott. But you can't come across as uncaring. You can't allow it to be your undoing. What, want to change the tide of this race? Show America you care by battling coronavirus, keeping Americans safe, and convince them this pandemic will end soon. Do that and continue to ask about the Democrats' push to raise taxes, pack the Supreme Court, and make America more energy dependent on countries that dislike us. In other words, do what your vice president did. But even better, if you can. Obituaries and death notices. Diana Postus Arrieta, 82, of Midland, passed away Tuesday, October 6th, surrounded by her family. Funeral services is under the direction of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts.online.net, or you can visit our website at www.luellagarciapipkinfh.com. PipkinFH.com. Donald Lee Tidwell, born September 18, 1934, died October 3rd after a long battle with Parkinson's. A private graveside service will be held in Kermit at Thanksgiving. Raymond Sprague, age 79, went to be with his Lord on September 14th. He had resided in Breckenridge for the last 16 years of his life. The family will be having a celebration of life at the popular 103 West Walker, Breckenridge, Texas, on October 10th at 1 p.m. Johnny Mortiz, 86, of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, October 7th. No services are scheduled at this time. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickleham Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory. Lorenzo Gonzalez, age 46, passed away in Midland. In keeping with his wishes, the family has made arrangements for cremation with a private family memorial service in Sierra Blanca. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, 2020. Section A. ECISD requesting CARES funds from city. To help defray the cost of devices and Wi-Fi provided to students during the pandemic, Ector County ISD has requested almost $1 million in CARES Act funds from the City of Odessa. Superintendent Scott Murray said the district was invited to request the funds. He expected the item to come up at the October 13th City Council meeting. It was discussed during the October 6th work session. ECISD requested a little more than $985,000, Murray said. City of Odessa Director of Communications Devin Sanchez said with the Community Development Block Grant coronavirus funds, the city is seeking applicants for eligible activities from 501c3 or government entities that are able to provide audited financial statements and comply with all other CDBG regulations. The distribution of these funds does require public hearings on approval and allocation of funds, Sanchez said in an email. The city received $6,631,240 in CARES funding, Sanchez stated. For the coronavirus relief funds, the city council was given discretion on how to spend it. Since the beginning of the pandemic, it has become evident of the importance of reliable internet service, especially for our students. Because of this digital divide, the city's coronavirus task force met to discuss the possibility of working with ECISD to facilitate distance learning for students. This is an eligible expenditure because it is for expenses of actions to facilitate compliance with COVID-19 related public health measures, such as expenses to facilitate distance learning, including technological improvements in connection with school closings to enable compliance with COVID-19 precautions, Sanchez wrote. Murray said the district is grateful for the opportunity. We met with the city council earlier this week and shared a proposal with them, Murray said during a media call Wednesday. This proposal is requesting almost $1 million in funding from the city council using the city's COVID-19 dollars from the CARES Act. This money would be used to refund some of the technology dollars we've spent from our general fund to purchase technology for our students. We've purchased Chromebooks and iPads and MiFi devices for a lot of our students to connect from their homes and to make sure that our kids have the appropriate technology to be successful in our current environment. The City Council invited us to apply for this opportunity, so we're very grateful for the conversation, he said. Murray said ECISD's recent purchase was for almost $4 million. Half of that was matched by CARES money from the TEA, Texas Education Agency. The other $2 million was paid by ECISD. However, we have a new opportunity. If the city of Odessa uses a portion of their CARES money, the state will match dollar for dollar the CARES money. If the city contributes $100, the state of Texas would contribute $100. And we have requested $985,000 of our expenses from the city. And if they agree to that amount, the state would match that, which would cover the complete cost of that most recent purchase of technology that we've made. Murray said he was appreciative of whatever the city is able to do. And it was a great opportunity, and they shared this with us, so we're grateful for anything that they are able to do. It would allow us to actually invest some of our own dollars for broadband access, and part of this money is for internet access. We purchased with these dollars 1,000 Wi-Fi devices, and those will be available to our families. But we know that those devices do not work all over Ector County, and there's a lot of broadband work to do within our community, he said. But this specific money that the city has access to is federal CARES money. There are specific guidelines that go along with the use of that money, Murray added. Christmas in Action provides comfort to Odessa couple, by Michael Bauer. For Corina Rodriguez and Jose Medina receiving their new furnace was a godsend. The Odessa couple who live with disabilities had been in need of a new furnace, and Thursday their prayers were answered when members from Lennox, Red Hawk Heating and Air with AirTech helped install a new furnace in their home. The event was part of Lennox Community Impact Program, which benefits local community members as well as a partnership with Odessa's Christmas in Action. I just feel very blessed that there are people out there, angels, who give us a lot of hope when you think there isn't, Rodriguez said. We're very grateful. Rodriguez was born and raised in Odessa, while her husband, Jose, has lived here since 1971. Rodriguez suffers from rheumatoid arthritis and COPD. Jose is retired now, she said. It's getting to where it's so overwhelming to do housework here. We didn't think we would get to the point where we would need help to do all of our accomplishments in our home. Christmas in Action is a nonprofit organization that repairs homes of low income elderly or disabled homeowners. They have to be qualified, but if they need a roof or an air conditioner or a heater or windows or doors, anything for their disability and it pertains to their home, we are happy to do that for them at no cost. Executive Director of Odessa Christmas in Action, Barbara Nunez, said. The way the application works depends on a few items. Among them are being a homeowner, being 60 years or older or physically disabled, and having a home located in Ector County, just to name a few. A home also cannot be accepted by a volunteer team 2 years in a row. What we want to do is make sure that they have what they need to stay in their own home for safety and through the weather and things like that. While the weather may still be warm outside, it won't be that way for long as fall advances into winter. Basically, if you look at it, this is the time to be doing heater work, Nunez said. The spring is the time to be doing air conditioning work. What we're trying to do is get ahead while Red Hawk, Lennox, and AirTech are not as busy. We're just trying to get that heater in when they're not as busy. The furnace was provided free of charge by Lennox. It feels wonderful to be a part of the community, Red Hawk heating and air conditioning owner Mark Russell said. For 41 years, Odessa has supported us, Russell said. They fed our family. They put our kids through school and put food on the table for us. It's good to give back. This is the second year that Christmas in Action has partnered with Lennox. We're all in it to serve our community and make sure that these people can stay in their own homes, Nunez said. It's bad enough with Corona going on. This is their home, and you want them to stay there. It's also not the first time that Christmas in Action has helped out Rodriguez and Medina. About 3 years ago, they helped construct a ramp for them after Rodriguez had foot surgery. I'm very thankful for this organization, Rodriguez said. Judge will decide jurisdiction of OA lawsuit. A visiting state district judge is expected to rule within 2 weeks on whether the Odessa Americans public information legal fight against the city of Odessa can proceed. In a hearing Thursday in the 161st State District Court, Judge Rodney Satterwhite of Midland said he would review pleadings from both parties and determine whether he has the legal power to proceed further with the case, which the city claims he doesn't. The newspaper has sued the city and is seeking for the judge to force the city to follow the Texas Public Information Act concerning timely release of basic public crime information. The newspaper has alleged numerous violations in which the city delayed or heavily redacted the information and sent it to the AG, delaying public information that has always been released in a timely manner. Attorneys for the city attempted to argue that the violations never happened and cited legal technicalities as to why the judge had no authority to rule that the court had the power to enforce the TPIA. Basically, the city is asking the judge to make a first-of-its-kind ruling that the court does not have the power to enforce the Texas public records law based on allegations of the illegal conduct against the city described by the OA. OA publisher Patrick Canty said following the hearing. The judge declined to make a ruling from the bench and promised a decision within 2 weeks. While I certainly appreciate the judge wanting to do his due diligence before making a ruling, I believe the city's argument is totally without merit, Canty said. Apparently, the city does not want the court to address the merits of the case. What's sad about this is that in this case, it is the paper that is having to go to the time and expense to fight for this basic public information. It could just as easily be any regular member of the public. John Bushin, a national authority on First Amendment law, is the OA's lead counsel, and he was assisted by Midland attorney Randall Rouse. Papers filed in advance of Thursday's hearing detail the OA's assertion that the city of Odessa has systematically violated the Texas Public Information Act, TPIA, by taking days to screen every request, delaying the release of records the public is clearly entitled to see. Initially, the city was sending most requests to the AG for review, but more recently has somewhat backtracked, sending only some to the state. The city's attorneys, Austin-based William Cobb and Ann Staling of Cobb and Counsel, essentially, we're trying to make the case that the city delaying the immediate release of public information was because the city was trying to comply with the law. I just think they are trying to throw up roadblocks, Canty said. While I can appreciate that being part of their jobs as legal advocates for the city, I also find that unfortunate because basically we are just an extension of the public. Does this mean that any ordinary citizen would have to jump through these legal hoops just to obtain public information to which they are entitled? Odessa Mayor David Turner and City Councilman Dewey Bryant were in attendance. Both are seeking elected office again this year, with Turner running for the at-large seat and Bryant seeking the mayor's slot. The city has spent more than $60,000 fighting the lawsuit so far. That number does not include September or October billings. Health officials warn about COVID resurgence by Michael Bauer. With a small resurgence in COVID cases from the county from recent days, officials from Medical Center Hospital, Odessa Regional Medical Center, and the Ector County Health Department are urging people to remain cautious and not allow a second spike during a virtual hospital briefing Thursday. MCH Director of Communications Trevor Tankersley said the total number of active COVID-19 cases in Ector County as of Thursday afternoon were 5,167, with 3,276 confirmed and 1,891 probable cases. The positivity rate has gone back up to 18.25%, with the hospitalization rate at 7.88%. The Ector County Health Department website was updated after the briefing to show there are 29 new confirmed positive cases and 23 new probable positive cases. While 4,372 people have recovered from the virus, 101 Ector County residents have died from COVID-19 related complications. If you look at the graph on the Ector County website, the Health Department website, the positive tests are trending back up, Dr. Timothy Benton said. However, that doesn't just include Ector County, but also other communities in West Texas and the Panhandle that are seeing an upward trend of cases, Benton said. We're not out of the woods, Benton said. Who knows if this is a surge? It's not uncommon for respiratory viruses, and we see this during the flu season every year. keep your distance, wear your masks. To reinforce what Benton said, Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan added that there's a certain level of fatigue that sets in when we're talking about this week after week. It's very important that we take what we see seriously, Saravanan said. Whether or not another spike is about to come is hard to say. With regard to the hospitalizations, the only way we're going to see a spike is if we see certain facilities start to turn positives, like nursing homes, jails, etc., in our community itself. The age distribution still happens to be the youthful, between the ages of 20 and 50 that are turning positive, which means that these people are getting together more and that they're giving it to each other. Odessa Regional Medical Center CEO Stacy Brown reported that ORMC has tested 3,797 patients, 496 of which are positives. Currently, Thursday, we have 10 COVID-positive patients in-house, Brown said. Five of those are in ICU, and all five of them are on ventilators. That 10 is made up of four from Ector County, five from Big Spring, and one from Pampa. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons reported that their total number of positives from everybody tested is 1,607. And the number of negatives is 5,847. Currently, we have 14 tests pending, Timmons said. Overall, we've tested 7,468. Saravanan said there are still ways to prevent a second wave of COVID cases. What we have right now is two things: good ways to treat people that have the disease and allow them a better fighting chance, and a very good way to prevent transmissions, which is social distancing and wearing masks. Let's just remind ourselves that we need to keep this going for a little bit longer so that we don't see another spike. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 5,219. Ector County negative, 23,793 out of 29,343 tested, with 331 pending, 101 deaths. Recovered, 4,372. Active, 746. ECISD daily cases, one student, three staffs. Midland County, 4,080 confirmed, 85 deaths. Texas, 781,794 confirmed, with 6,703,106 tested. Total Texas deaths, 16,334. U.S. cases, 7,528,313 total confirmed, and 211,132 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPFUQ. Quick hits. Lockout at Milam. A call about shots fired led to Milam Elementary School, 815 South Dixie, being on lockout for a short time Thursday afternoon. The school went into lockout at 3:09 p.m. and was out at 3:26 p.m. The shots apparently came from a funeral service at a nearby funeral home, and Ector County ISD Communications Officer Mike Adkins said they were blanks. Lockout is formerly known as shelter in place, Atkins said previously. It is a precaution the district takes when something is happening nearby. Dine and Donate Week. After Pink the Basin's annual fundraising luncheon was canceled, the team at Press Cafe, 4400 Parks Legado Road, has scheduled Dine and Donate Week, Tuesday through October 17th, all day, breakfast, lunch, and early dinner. During this week, everything ordered will be completely paid for by Sewell Chevrolet, their sponsor. In exchange, diners will be asked to give a donation to Pink the Basin in the amount of what their meal would have cost or more. Press Cafe will take the donations in the same manner that you'd typically pay them for your meal at the register. All donations will remain in the Permian Basin and support local women with mammograms, diagnostics, and prostheses. For more information and directions, visit presscafe.com or at PressCafeTX on social media. Walk to End Alzheimer's is everywhere in virtual format by Michael Bauer. COVID-19 may have stopped or delayed numerous events this year, but one event that it won't cancel is the Walk to End Alzheimer's. However, it will force this year's event to take place in a virtual setting, meaning that people can do it from anywhere. The Alzheimer's Association will be hosting their walk at 10 a.m. Saturday. You know, of course, anything you do these days, the first thing you mention is that COVID has changed everything. Brandy Paget, who is on the committee for West Texas to End Alzheimer's, said, "Because Alzheimer's is prevalent in old people, the Alzheimer's Association and the committee members have worked really hard to still raise money to make sure that everyone stays safe. We've gone above and beyond as far as safety protocols." A promise garden will be set up at the campuses of Midland College and UTPB, where people can write sentimental messages for their loved ones who have been affected by Alzheimer's. We're having a virtual opening ceremony where people will be in different locations and you can log onto your computer and watch the opening ceremony, Paget said. She said participants will be walking in their individual locations. They will be taking pictures and sending them in at the same time as they're walking, Paget said. It's all going to be on the website so that everyone can watch what everyone else is doing. We have several people who are walking in their own neighborhood. The opening ceremony will take place at 10 a.m. with the event ending at 11 p.m. However, Paget says people can still participate even after the event. The money will be raised through the end of the year, Paget said. Even if you want to do your own walk later on, that's fine. The great thing about doing this event virtually is that even if the weather is terrible on Saturday, you can pick a date and time that works. And you can submit pictures to our website and anything else. We'd like to hear stories about how it went. Those who want to register or donate can do so on the event's website at tinyurl.com/Y2XXCJV8. City sees decline in October's sales tax revenue. The city of Odessa received its October sales tax check in the amount of $3,886,046.16, a City of Odessa press release detailed. This amount also reportedly includes the economic development sales tax of 0.25 cent. The City of Odessa will receive $3,108,836.93, while Odessa Development Corporation will receive $770,209.23. The city saw a decrease in sales tax revenue with October's sales tax revenue total of $3,108,836.93, which showed a $1,631,492.28 decline as compared to October 2019. The year-to-date total sales tax revenue for fiscal year 2020-21 is up $441,010.80 as compared to budgeted amount expected at this point in the fiscal year. In addition, the 2020-21 year-to-date amount is below the previous fiscal year-to-date amount by $1,631,492.28. The city has budgeted $36 million in net sales tax revenues for this current fiscal year. Odessa Arts launches membership drive. Odessa Arts has launched its annual membership drive. Included in the membership incentives is a members-only look inside the newly remodeled Ector Theater, October 21st, with a special one-night-only screening of the Stevie Nicks concert film, 24 Karat Gold. Before COVID hit, our membership drive included tickets to the Odessa Shakespeare Festival, Executive Director Randy Hamm said in a news release. Since the festival will be going virtual this year, we were looking for an opportunity to find a replacement event. Luckily, the stars aligned, and we were able to book this exclusive film event and give the community a sneak peek at the Ector. The film features a set list of fan-favorite Nicks songs from her solo career and as a member of Fleetwood Mac, including Rhiannon, Stop Dragging My Heart Around, Edge of 17, Stand Back, Landslide, and more, as well as other tunes from her platinum-selling catalog. The film also reveals intimate storytelling and inspirations for some of the most famous songs and lyrics. To ensure the safety of the audience, seating is limited and open only to Odessa Arts members at the patron level or above. Seating will be assigned and masks will be required. That's one of the great things about this drive. We've also commissioned local artists to design masks for our membership. Four different designs from four artists will be available with your membership as well, Hamm said in the release. To secure tickets as well as other membership incentives, visit https://odessaarts.org/become-a-member/.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.